You're listening to Pastor Bill Surjack.
Our scripture lesson this morning, as we've been studying through the book of Joshua, it's in the 10th chapter of Joshua in the first 15 verses of the 10th chapter. So hear now the word of God. Now Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had taken Ai and totally destroyed it, doing to Ai and its king as he has done to Jericho and its king, and that the people of Gibeon had made a treaty of peace with Israel and were living near them. He and his people were very much alarmed at this, because Gibeon was an important city, like one of the royal cities. It was larger than Ai, and all its men were good fighters. So Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, appealed to Homan, king of Hebron, Phirim, king of Jarmuth, Japhi, king of Lachish, and Debar, king of Elgon. Come up and help me attack Gibeon, he said, because it has made peace with Joshua and the Israelites. Then the five kings of the Amorites, the kings of Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Elgon, joined forces. They moved up with all their troops and took up positions against Gibeon and attacked it. The Gibeonites then sent word to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal, "Do not abandon your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us. Help us, because all the Ammonite kings from the hill country have joined forces against us." So Joshua marched up from Gilgal with his entire army, including all the best fighting men. The Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid of them. I have given them into your hand. Not one of them will be able to withstand you." After an all-night march from Gilgal, Joshua took them by surprise. The Lord threw them into confusion before Israel, who defeated them in a great victory at Gibeon. Israel pursued them along the road up to Beth Horon and cut them down all the way to Achaz and Makkedah. And as they came before Israel on the road down from Beth Horon to Achazah, the Lord hurled large hailstones down on them from the sky, and more of them died from the hailstones than were killed by the swords of the Israelites. On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, "O sun, stand still over Gibeon, O moon over the valley of Ajon." So the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation avenged itself on the enemy. As it is written in the book of Zechariah, the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. There has never been a day like it before or since, a day when the Lord listened to a man. Surely the Lord was fighting for Israel. Then Joshua returned with all Israel to the camp at Gilgal. Thank God that he has not left us alone to know what he is like, but he's revealed himself in a way that we can understand by becoming a man in the person of Christ, and that revelation is accurately retained for us. And this is Holy Word. Sometimes I complain about growing up on a farm because it meant a lot of work. There was a lot of times when I would feed livestock at the end of each day and working almost all summer long in the field. As I've thought about it, you know, although I didn't grow up at the church at all, growing up on the farm was a really good preparation for the work that I've done for most of my life. One of the things that my father did was, when I was 8 years old, he got a Ford tractor that was one that I could reach the pedals on. So I started driving a tractor when I was 8 years old. Sometimes I couldn't get the pedals all the way down by sitting in the seat, but would stand there at little running boards that you could stand on and push down the pedals. My father was very careful to teach me the whole thing and what I needed to know about the tractor. And then we had a large field, and he basically just turned me loose in the field and said, "Okay, practice." And so for several days in a row, day after day, I'd go out there in the field and drive the tractor around until I got to be able to drive it pretty well. That was in the spring, and then in the summer, when we began the harvest of wheat and barley, that was back in the days when you had a grain binder, a McCormick grain binder. A tractor would be used to pull that, and it would cut the wheat down and put it into bundles that it would then drop on the ground, and then it would be gathered together into sheaves, a little stalk-like, and then they would be thrashed later on. So that was my first job, really, on the farm. I was 9 years old at that time, and I was running the grain binder. Fortunately, at that time, my grandfather was riding on the grain binder because someone had to ride on the grain binder and put the sheaves down where they were supposed to be. Then gradually I learned to do more and more things in the farm. And each time when I would do them, my father was very careful to teach me what was going on with the things. He was also very trusting then to let me go and let me work with it. By the time I was about 10 years old or 11 years old, I think it was, I started running a thing called a forage harvester. Now that's something that takes fresh cut hay, it runs it into the front of the forage harvester. There's this big wheel inside the forage harvester with knives on the end of it, and it spins around real fast and cuts the hay into about 1-inch pieces. Now, when you were driving it, one of the things that you had to do if it got clogged back there, you had to be very careful to shut it off every time you got off the thing, because there was a power takeoff shaft that went back to run that forage harvester. And you had to make sure that you shut that off before you got off, because it spun around, and if you had some loose clothing on, it could easily grab your clothing and break your leg if it was still running when you got off the tractor. And then you had to go back, and if it clogged up, you had to unclog it. So I would do that, and my father was very careful to teach me how to handle the things. The forage harvester was not too bad to deal with, because with that big blade spinning around inside its shield, it was a little bit frightening. So you were usually very careful to make sure you didn't want to get near that thing when it was running. And so I would turn it off very carefully every time you got off. And most farmers would too. And then you'd go back, unclog it, then go on. I was having to learn this when I was 11 years old to be able to make sure that I knew how to handle these things. Probably the worst thing, or the thing that caused the most damage to people on the farm, was a corn picker. I'd ran those too when I was about 11 years old. In a corn picker, you go along with the rows of corn, and it has two metal rollers in it. And what it does is the corn stalks come down in there, so the two rollers come together, and then the ear of corn pops off and goes into a little conveyor, and it goes into the wagon behind it. And that didn't look quite as imposing, really, as a forage harvester. But it was really the more dangerous, because the corn stalks were still stuck in the ground. They would clog up. It would be very tempting to leave the rollers running so that all you would do is sort of push through the stalk, because otherwise you had to pull the stalk sometimes completely out of the ground before you could unclog it. It would be very tempting not to turn it off, but to go back there and work with it so that it would come loose and then it would pull itself on through. And many farmers lost their hand by doing that, by not letting go of the corn stalk quickly enough and pulling their hand in between those two rollers, and it would just crush their hand. Now, our neighbor, as a matter of fact, lost his hand that way. So all the way through, when I was growing up, I had to learn to be able to run things that could be quite dangerous, but I had to learn to be able to handle them well and to handle them carefully, to be respectful of their danger and to be able to work with them. Had I just been growing up afraid of them, I probably would have grown up rather fearful. But one of the things that I think that helped me was to be able to grow up learning to not be fearful, but to step into difficult situations and to be able to work my way through them as well as I could. And I think that's a very helpful thing for kids to learn, particularly if you can learn them well. Because when you grow up, there's a lot of fearful situations that you have to get into. If you're a businessman, you might have to take a chance that you're going to lose some money in what you do in your business ventures. And you have to be careful, but you also can't be fearful because you have to go ahead and do them. If you're a doctor, you could make a mistake that would cost someone their life or maybe even cripple the person, whatever. But you have to go ahead and do it. You have to be able to trust yourself to be able to do things well and to not be fearful with doing it. And even as a preacher, so well, you don't have any problems with that. But you see, if it was just me, I could teach someone the wrong thing that could internally send them to hell. And so the position that you're in as a teacher of God's people is also possibly a fearful place that you could be. And you want to be careful that you do it well, that you do it right. The Bible says some rather harsh things about teachers that lead God's children astray. Now, as you grow up in each one of those things, one of the things that had to happen for me was that I had to learn that myself. But then I had to also learn the limitations of my own mind and my own care. and realize that there are times when even if I'm as careful and think things through as well as I possibly can, things may still go wrong. And also you have to learn to be able to trust God in the middle of that. That even if things go wrong, if you're a businessman and you do a deal that loses a lot of money, God still has the power to work it out for good. If you're a doctor and you make a mistake, God still has the power to be able to work that out for good. And if you're a preacher, you can depend upon the Lord as being the ultimate one who will decide whether what you've taught is listened to or not listened to. You have to trust God. And so that sort of takes you to another level. Not only have to be able to trust yourself, or you have to be able to not be fearful in making the choices, but you also have to bring the reality of God into it and learn to deal with God's power in the midst of all that you're doing. And so that God is the one who ultimately will bring things for good. Joshua, you can watch him going through that learning process. And you can see him beginning to make mistakes and God working with that, and then God continuing to teach him how to be able to deal well with God's power. Jericho was probably the first time that Joshua had the opportunity to be able to just see the power of God at work. And all he basically had to do was have his people march around the wall 7 times, blow the trumpet, and the walls fell down. And Joshua probably got the idea, this is going to be easy. This is going to be wonderful. All we have to do is just let God take care of all the battle. And then there was Ai. As he went into that with that kind of a confidence, and he went up there, and they were defeated. And God had to teach them again a little bit more about what it is to work with God. You don't just let God do the whole thing and watch his power be demonstrated. We are involved in it too. We have to be doing things wisely and be taught to do things well according to God. When Jesus was taken to the top of the temple and tempted, Satan said, throw yourself off the temple. The angels will come and rescue you. And Jesus said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. Jesus not only had God's power in him, but he also had learned to use that power wisely and well. And what God was doing with Joshua, you could see him beginning to learn to use the power well. He was also fooled and tricked and duped by the people from Gibeon. And he learned from that. And he learned to be able to, again, use God's power well. And now it was an interesting thing, because you had all the kings of the land that they were told to conquer banding together to fight against the Israelites. And usually when we run up against our own ability to do things, usually what we do is we bind together with others. But what Joshua knew how to do was to bind himself to God and to trust God and to be able to listen to God and gain God's wisdom and then move forward. And here you see Joshua doing things well. He is beginning to do and to begin to work truly as God's man in the world. Because the kings had gathered together to attack Gibeon. They were going to make them an example of people who, since they went over to the side of the Israelites, they were going to make them an example and destroy them. And the Gibeonites sent out to Joshua and asked for help. And it says that Joshua marched the troops all through the night to be able to get there. Joshua didn't just say, we can just relax, God's going to take care of it. We don't have to worry about it. He marched the troops all the way through the night so that they could surprise the coalition of the other kings. And they engaged them in battle. And they fought and they were winning. And it wasn't like God's protection or God's strength or God's power protected them completely. because Israelites died in the battle. But he gave them the victory. He enabled them to be able to win the battle against the consolidation of the king. And it wasn't just God doing it. Joshua had learned how to be able to work with God's power. And they did what they could. They acted wisely, they acted well, and they acted with strength. And in there is one of the most amazing things of history. Because you see, Joshua prayed to God that the sun would stop. Because you see, they were winning the battle. But it would soon be dark, and then the other side would have a chance to regroup and be able to carry on the battle. And Joshua prayed to God that the sun would stop. And by that time, Joshua had grown to be so in tune with what God's power was doing. The sun stopped. The battle continued. The alliance of the kings were utterly defeated. God even brought in hailstones to be able to help out in the battle. But again, notice, God didn't do everything. They still had to fight the battle. And they still had to work together with God to be able to do things well and do things within God's way. And that's the way God works with us. Just like he might teach a little 11-year-old kid how to be able to handle farm machinery and how to be able to approach it with respect and with care and learn how to do it, God also begins to teach us how to deal with his power and his strength. And I don't think he entrusts us with any more of it than we've learned how to deal with it. And we can begin to see God's power at work. It's wonderful to be able to watch Joshua in a learning process of being able to live and to work with the reality of the power of God all around him.